Hey, Prime members, you can listen to Men in Blazers ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the app today. Whether it's a midweek game on the continent or a big weekend clash, cash in with your soccer knowledge on Prize Picks, America's number one fantasy sports app. Download the app today. Use code MIB for a first deposit match of up to $100. This episode is supported by FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League Two after 15 long seasons of exile in the National League. Dedicated staff and passionate supporters celebrate the city's return to glory, the big time, all while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in that higher league. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenge and rise again into League One's promised land? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
This is Rebecca Lowe, or Rebecca Lua, if you listen to Suboptimal Radio, and you are listening to Men in Blazers on the NBC Sports Network.
It's unbelievable!
From the Embassy Row Studios in the crap part of Bedford, New York, and the crap part of West Hollywood, California, it's the Men in Blazers podcast, Rog.
We're back like the Arsenal Invincibles, Davo, yeah. As we will discuss. How are you holding up, mate?
I'm doing good. A little early in the morning over here, but it's another beautiful day, Rog. I'm optimistic for what this day will bring.
Oh, it is 9 o'clock in the morning here and my day is already filled with darkness. But why sully ourselves in talk about my darkness when we can talk about football, Dave, and so bloody much this weekend. We need to dive into it. I actually almost went cross-eyed on Saturday. This was a Premier League weekend in which, I mean, there were firings, there were shocks across the top. It meant almost every single game was epic. And I do want to say some of the finest football I watched this weekend was in the NWSL playoffs, a dramatic win for Washington Spirit, whose players, my Lord, have been through what I can't even imagine with their terrible, terrible owners, and the mighty Chicago Red Stars, who down Gotham, bringing the epic career of Carly Lloyd to an end. We released a film we shot with a human being who embodies tenacity, big game mentality, sacrifice, grind. I mean, she talks about the loneliness of her climb to the top. It's out there now. You can see it. And I just want to say right off the top of the podcast, before we dive in to the rest of the crap, huge love and respect, Carly. I think we will never see her like again, David.
Football's great, Rog. It's all wonderful. But
Is it really?
Yeah, this time of year, I become much more excited about shopping and holiday merchandise, Roger. You ready for it? We are teaming up with the GFOPs at Home Field Apparel to create a very special Men in Blazers Courage, or Courage, if you are a Francophone. It's a crew neck sweatshirt, Rog, a Courage crew neck sweatshirt. The samples have just arrived. This is one tasty piece of gear.
You should be asking me, are you wearing one now, or have you tattooed the Men in Blazers Home Field collab on your chest? Because it's hard to tell the difference.
Oh, my word. Look at you.
If I could get this tattooed on my chest, I would, Davo. It's such a beautiful reflection of who we are. And to partner with Home Field Apparel, the good brand founded in Indianapolis 2018 by collegiate sweatshirt whisperers Connor and Krista Hitchcock, my mates. Oh, it is a college apparel company for the thinking human. If you watch any of our digital content and your retina were not burnt by the experience, then you will have seen me, I bet, wearing 1, 2, 3. I mean, God, I think they've done 120 colleges and I own about 119. And so to partner with Home Field on our holiday gift 2021, a sweatshirt that loves America almost as much as I love America as we head into a World Cup year. You know, this is a design that pays tribute to US soccer teams of yore while eagerly saluting the future, hashtag baby eagles. And if you want to see what it looks like, check out our social media where we've just released a video about the new merch, this new collab, and our love for this singular brand, Home Field. Davo, tell the people how they can get it.
Can I just say first, Rog, that not all pieces of clothing are flattering to your physique, but I don't think you've ever looked better.
In a funny way, Dave, I've never felt happier.
The most important thing to know is you have to be a Raven newsletter subscriber to get the sweatshirt. Sign up for our newsletter on meninblazers.com. Then next Monday, November 15th, we will send out a Raven with a special link at which you can purchase the sweatshirt. It is a limited edition of 1,200. That means we will not be producing more. Once these are gone, they are gone.
God, we get so many people emailing us being like, when you said it was limited edition, when are you going to produce more? And the honest truth is, we will not be. These are one and done. And we should also mention, proceeds go to the mighty Hope for the Warriors, one of our favorite charities, which provides incredible assistance to combat wounded service members, their families, and the families of those killed in action. They are truly a force of good, and it's incredible to partner with them too. Courage.
Absolutely. Two programming notes from Men in Blazers World Headquarters. The first, we will be back on Spotify Green Room this week at our regular day and time of Wednesday at 7 p.m. Eastern. Come and join us. And piece of news, the second, the Men in Blazers Season 8 premiere, which aired yesterday on NBCSN. Still not cancelled, Rog. It's available now on Peacock, where all of our episodes will live this season. That's exciting.
Those who've already seen the episode will know we're doing the show in such a way that will allow them to live beyond the match week in which they air. I think it's known in the end, in the industry, Dave. The end. Yeah. Don't you call it an evergreen in the end?
We do call it an evergreen, yeah.
In the end. So even if you missed it, topically, these shows should not stale. Any more stale than they are when we record them
at point of conception.
We will be back on air on the 21st. Oh, I think I'm just about to go and interview Jamie Lannister, who is proper Leeds United for that. I mean, like proper Leeds United in the face. One other note, our new series, American Dreams, presented by Budweiser, our friends there, debuts on Wednesday. That's tomorrow, with a magnificent, it is amazing, it's a life-affirming interview with Tyler Adams, who's been the heart and soul and the brains of the US World Cup qualification so far. What a leader.
Okay, Rog, can we get a twist?
Oh, mate, I want to raise my first third bud of the day to the English tradition of Remembrance Day. It is just a solemn marking, also known as Poppy Day. You'll know it from the Premier League jerseys, which now sport, I mean, they seem to get larger every single year, the poppies that are now front and centre. It's a ritual it's becoming, in a way, football often does when it engages with something. It is a ritual that's becoming slightly overblown with weeks of ceremony that many feel is more about football trying to look righteous as opposed to truly marking anything. But I do want to say Remembrance Day is a beautiful, beautiful Sunday. It marks the end of the First World War, and it honours armed forces members who have passed away in the line of duty. And I do find the reading of the Lawrence Binyon poem, For the Fallen, I find it so deeply moving every time I hear it. I don't know if you watched the pre-kickoff ceremonies of the West Ham game, having West Ham icon and just generally remarkable human being Trevor Brooking read it was incredibly moving. They shall grow not old, as we that are left grow old. Age shall not weary them, nor the years condemn. At the going down of the sun and in the morning, we will remember them.
The silence at these crowded football stadiums can occasionally just take your breath away. Okay. To the football. Not sure if you heard about it, but there was a Manchester derby this weekend. Manchester United 0, Manchester City 2, with Ole at the wheel. Pep was able to put it in cruise control in a game that was all City from the jump, Rog. The first half was essentially just a shooting drill on David De Gea, and we're not just talking about City players. United players were having a go at the Spaniards' goal as well, and it was one of the men in red who struck first. Eric Bailly turned a João Cancelo cross into his own net. The second goal was somehow even worse defending. On the stroke of halftime, another Cancelo ball found its way through Slabby and Luke Shaw, allowing Bernardo Silva to poke past a suddenly limp-wristed De Gea. And that was pretty much it, Rog. City go second, and this cyclical Groundhog Day Ole narrative arrives back where it was 2 weeks ago. before that win over Tottenham.
186 Manchester Derby. I think I've seen every single one of them. Yep. And this was, yeah, we started podding right before the first, didn't we, Dave? This was one of the single most uneven I can remember for decades. United returning to Old Trafford for the very first time since that 5-0 beat down against Liverpool. Just like a team who have a kick me post-it stuck on their bat that they're unable to peel off. And Ole, God bless, we've said this, there is not a nicer man in football. But we've also said this, he's a brand ambassador, not a football manager. And I don't know where you were mentally before kickoff, David, but I know, speaking to every United fan that I know, they almost sounded like Evertonians approaching a Merseyside derby, hoping for a haymaker, brace for the very, very worst, holding on to the shield that Ole was unbeaten in his last four league games against Pep ahead of this one. But this just felt less the kind of passion of Manchester Derby Day and more just so bloody predictable and one-sided before a ball had even been kicked.
Yeah, I mean, you say that, and of course, you know, mentally, theoretically, I was right there with you. And yet, it's hard for me to get a lot of stuff out of my memory banks. The fact that derbies rarely, you know, follow the form book. This is a Manchester derby, like full of passion, full of fire. The fact that City have not done that well against United over the previous few seasons, certainly not in the league games. And I just expected these unbelievable Man United players, whatever their tactical formation or tactical training was, I just expected them to show up way, way stronger and at least give City a game.
Yeah. Oh, I mean,
didn't happen.
God, Ole went into this one persevering with his newfangled back three, lads, which had been heavily dented by Atalanta's ninjas midweek. And here, there was no Raphael Varane, the proficient anchor, cruelly out with a hamstring injury. Instead, Maguire, Bailly, Lindelof quaked onto the field, knowing that together they amount to about one decent defender if you crushed all three into one human being. And so United began in a defensive shell. They'd beaten City last season by using pace to get in behind them, but Ronaldo doesn't offer that. So City had little to fear. They began with De Bruyne and Gundogan pushing high up the field, right against the back three. They essentially said, David, from the kickoff, we are going to make your back five be pinned back. We are then going to grab you, slap your face in front of your own fans for this entire game, and there's nothing you're going to be able to do about it.
I mean, yeah, and it was a back five. And you know, I think I have a slightly, I don't think I'd be quite so critical of Maguire, Bailly and Lindelof. I think by any standards, these are, you know, elite international defenders who, for some reason, are playing like right now that each of them only add up to one, not even anywhere near elite defender. There is just something about watching these players shrink rather than grow, as we watch players all over the Premier League grow into something so much better than they are. I wouldn't put all of the blame on these individual players. And tactically, they just had nothing. They had nothing. They had no width. They had no strength. They had no ability to fight the Man City press from the off. It was one of the more one-sided openings, which continued throughout the entire game, that I can remember seeing in the Premier League.
I mean, City were just, they were just like reveling. We are going to flood your box with talent. By the way, that idea, your idea, like Harry Maguire saying to Lindelof and Bailly, what do I contribute to the one good player, lads, if we were crushed together? And then be like, a big forehead, Harry, maybe? I mean, Pep essentially parked the bus, but he parked it in his opponent's penalty area, cross after cross. It was lethal cross after cross, just pounded at an exposed De Gea. And 7 minutes in, United buckled. Kyle Walker had all the time in the world to whip one in.
He had a bit more time than that, Rog.
Did he?
Yeah, a little bit more time. It
Man,
actually,
I've got all the time
broke
in the world.
The rules of space
now, I've
and
got
time.
More, you got more than that, Carly. You can have a sex party and still cross the ball lethally. Oh.
On another planet, get back and still cross the ball.
I mean, what happened when he did cross it in there? I mean, I'm still confused by the chain of mysterious, curious events that occurred. There was Lindelof scraping it clear. There's Cancelo leaping onto the loose ball. There's just another cross for the other side. The defender's like, turn around, lads. We don't turn around that quick. I mean, it was like watching master archers confuse the enemy.
Don't panic. I wasn't even sure the ball had crossed the line at the end. I thought it had hit the side stanchion. I just was very, very confused by the entire event.
When an exhausted Bailly just magnificently angled the ball past his own keeper, he almost seemed relieved that it was, oh, thank God it's over. I remember talking to Tim Howard about the Belgian game in the World Cup, and he said that he kept looking at the clock, the game clock, and he'd look and it would be like on 7 minutes, and then he'd look again and he'd think it must be nearly 83 minutes, but it was just on 9 minutes. And he said, he said time just went so blue. And I imagine like Bailly must have been like, the game must be nearly over, lads. But there was like, no, Eric, it's 7 minutes in, mate. Seven bloody minutes in.
Yeah, well, mentally, maybe he was at one of Carl Walker's parties, but
maybe. I hope for him. That would be, I mean, at least he'd be, you know, having a bit of a time. But that goal was 2021 United to a T, just playing a back five, but not telling them who to pick up and when. Having Fernandez just strolling around, thinking about his Champions League flick back to Ronaldo. You know, Manchester United's last clean sheet at Old Trafford came in March. United, faithful, cried for attack, but their build-up play was glacial. And when they didn't have the ball, they just stood around watching. I mean, marvelling at City's players pirouetting two positions at a mind-boggling rate. I mean, the way that Gabriel Jesus, Davo, at times was playing a false six.
I don't know if you saw Ole's post-match conference in which he described as what he really... When they said, well, what are you going to do about it? What could you have done differently? And he's like, well, I needed a magic wand to stop going 1-0 down. As though... what City were doing was magic, and it wasn't really tactically opposable in any way, and it was just like terribly bad luck.
By the way, we all think that was just like it was some kind of a metaphor. That really is his his, that's his big takeaway from this. He really did. I needed a magic wand.
Yeah, he's been very influenced by that.
I did bring it. I left it in the car, but I needed my magic wand. I mean. God, watching...
I need a magic wheel.
Yes, a magic wheel.
I can steer from the sidelines.
And a magic wand. Yeah. I mean, it's just watching Jesus just double as a defensive midfielder. The ground he covers, this was peak avant-garde positional invention by Pep, who probably thought about putting Zach Steffen on in the second half, on the wing, in his goalkeeper gloves, just to befuddle Luke Shaw. But, you know, Ronaldo couldn't get on the ball because his Scottie Pippen, Bruno... was frustrated, sucked back so deep. United had no out ball. They talked about Ronaldo. Ole talked about Ronaldo as Michael Jordan. This was, if that's true, it was Washington Wizard era Michael Jordan. It was the saddest Last Dance episode ever. Bastian Schweinsteiger summed it up best with a mid-game tweet. He said, passive United versus active City. The idea of football couldn't be more different. I wish United would be more active and not chase the ball non-stop and lose their energy. Take away the ball from Pep's team. I mean, the damning statistic that reflected this, Davo, every single Manchester City outfield player touched that ball more than every Manchester United player. It's a brutal truth that you can't, no matter how red-tinted your Ole loving glasses are, you cannot explain that truth away.
Yeah, I mean, look, I don't quite understand Bastian's tweet because he says that he wants them to be much more active and yet he doesn't want them to chase the ball. And it just seems that they do have to press like a Pep team. They do have to literally, at least if not chase the ball, hunt down the ball in order to get on it. It's like the game has changed. The game has changed markedly, and the kind of football, you know, that Pep and Jurgen Klopp and Thomas Tuchel are playing with their elite players. It's just a very... very different style of football than is played in the red part of Manchester.
Yeah, I mean, De Gea kept making save after save, like some kind of Spanish Ramsdale. Lindelof almost turned the ball into his own net. Pep suddenly finding his pure strikers that he's been said he doesn't have. They are called Manchester United centre-backs. And God, at the same time, David, going into the first half at the end where it was still 1-0, you kind of felt... maybe this was Ole's game plan to keep it to 1-0, have Ronaldo casually score a majestic wonder goal in the 95th minute. But this was torn up on the stroke of half time one of the single worst goals I've seen in a long time from a defensive perspective. And remember, I watch Everton week in, week out.
Yeah, no, this was a series. It was almost like one of those domino falls where dominoes just fell unrelated to each other, seemingly in sort of different parts simultaneously. This really was magic. And in the end, you know, little Bernardo Silva was on the end of it. But pretty much everybody on the United side had something to say with this goal.
Yeah, it felt like the ball had gone out, actually. I mean, you watch the players just watch it bounce. Luke Shaw, Premier League Brady Anderson just switching off. And you kind of, if you watch, you just give it, you know, you release. You think the ball's gone out and you get ready to go again. But in swept little Bernardo Silva, flicking it deliriously with some wizard filth past a stunned De Gea, who, you know, tired of being the little Dutch boy with his finger in the dike, just pulled out that finger and let the dike crack, let the ball bounce off his tummy into the goal. Again, conceding it almost looked like a relief for him. At least it's over. The pain can stop. And Ole, was there a plan B? Honest truth was, there couldn't have been. City barely let United touch the ball. Poor Jadon Sancho thrown on. I feel for him. United went back four, but Davo, City so dominant. To me, the 5-0 beatdown, this is what I felt. The 5-0 beatdown by Liverpool, this was almost worse because City were like, we can do anything to you. You can do nothing to stop us. We could smash you if we wanted, but you're not worth it to us.
Yeah, it was just the ease of the entire event. It was almost haunting, Rog. And this is a Manchester City side that, you know, haven't always been, you know, so dominant, just like all the top teams. They have their struggles here and there, not midweek, but they're coming off that 2-0 loss, terrible 2-0 loss at home to Crystal Palace last week. It was almost terrifying to see them so dominant in this game.
Yeah, the Stretford end began chanting Donny van de Beek's name. Ole's at the wheel, chants rang out, but they were being sung by City fans. And indeed, the ironic cheer that rang out for Donny van de Beek when he subbed on and the Jordan Love-esque Fred lolloped off was as damning in many ways as the boos for Nuno last weekend. And the stats were dark. Man United had famous stat now. This will be on T-shirts all over Manchester. More shots on target against their own keeper than against Edison. Sky flashed up a graphic that showed City enjoyed 68% of possession, took 32 touches in the United box. United had just four, and that is their previous low since Opta began counting these things in 2008. It's not going to get any easier for United. After the break, they got Chelsea away, then Arsenal at home. They're not going to make any changes, it seems, Davo, no matter how badly Roy Keane implodes in the English studio at halftime or Gary Neville rages at the club's social media director, who talked publicly last week about how he creates social media narratives for each of his players. What next, Davo? Because they are briefing the press that they have no plans to replace Ole. I did love Craig Burley's tweet that you could have stopped the press release after the word no plans.
Yeah, I mean, I think there are other reports that they are talking to a couple of managers, but that could be so premature. I mean, look, the reality is, Rog, there aren't that many managers who they can bring in who are going to flip this narrative for their social media director. I mean, it's either Mauricio Pochettino, you know, or David Moyes would be bold.
They miss Conte, fearing he'd be Mourinho 2.0. Yeah. Erik ten Hag is flavour of the season at Ajax, but has made it clear he will not leave mid-season. You're right, Pochettino, to me, is exactly what United need, a culture builder, but he won't leave right now either. So you either Ralph Rangnick, a fireman-style half-a-season interim caretaker, or stay pat, which seems what they're doing, and hope you can scrape fourth position and Champions League qualification. You know, I was speaking to a couple of US players about their time under Klinsmann recently, and they were like, when we had no plan, we made a plan. We knew it was down to us on the field. We were just like, let's do this. How much do you blame Ole and the United hierarchy? How much should this fall on the players?
I mean, look, I think that, you know, often, you know, I do expect elite players to step up, but I think here it's so clear. I think just the purchase of Jadon Sancho, you know, a player who they pursued for years, Rog, not just, you know, suddenly got him in one window. They pursued him for window after window, brought him in, and now play a system that Jadon Sancho doesn't fit in. And it just makes you realize that it's a, there is just no strategy, there's no plan across this club from the top all the way through. And so it's tough for me to be so critical of the players. And I tend to be more player positive. I think that these players don't make it to the Premier League by accident. They are elite, elite international players. We see lesser players at lesser, air quotes, clubs, you know, turning out great performances week after week and shock teams up and down the Premier League. And I just can't believe how little this club is getting out of the players. I don't blame Ole completely. I think he came in as a caretaker manager. There's just no plan at this club. And I think it's very sad. And I actually, it's very rare for me to say this, I actually feel for Manchester United fans going through this.
It's hard for me to believe those words, but watching them, Dave, I've got to say, I feel that emotion too in every way. And for those of you who think, what's the point of making change now? Three of the last six Champions League winners were led by managers who were meant to be short-term fixers. There's a lot of room to change this, even though the squad is an exquisite corpse. I'd love to see them give Phil Jones a chance, Dave. I predict he would excel as caretaker manager to such an extent that United will have to give him the job full-time. What a roller coaster his three-year tenure will be. Using Harry Maguire just to use his face to defend everything, on the floor, off the floor. I think it's going to be fantastic. But I do watch United against City, Ole against Pep. And we've talked a lot about this quote, but it's never felt more pertinent. Trapattoni's classic quote, a good manager makes a team 10% better. A bad manager makes it 30% worse. And I realised watching this, in today's modern elite football, where tiny, tiny changes, tiny differences have seismic effects, we saw on Saturday, the percentages are now more, much more than that.
And one game that reminds you of that, Rog, West Ham 3, Liverpool 2. David Moyes' irons continue their dream start to the season, deservedly, handing Liverpool their first L of the season in this thrilling game of football. They started the scoring in just the fourth minute, swinging in a corner, beautiful corner that Alisson steered into his own net. Liverpool pulled level just before halftime with a blistering TAA free kick, but a lightning quick Pablo Fornals counter and a Kurt Zouma thumping header put the Irons up 3-1 through 74 minutes. Liverpool pulled one back through Divock Origi and went bum-tighteningly close at the end via Sadio Mane, but the Irons hold on to leapfrog Liverpool into third place. The top four looks set for a serious case of hemochromatosis this season, Roger.
That sounds like an incredible Radiohead album. David Moyes, 1,000th match as manager. Well done, scriptwriters. Well done. It only had to be against Liverpool, whom he'd never beaten in his career. I have to say this, as an Evertonian, conditioned to him summoning plucky performances only to fail at last against the Reds and depart with eyes bulging and jaw jutting. I wasn't optimistic as I tuned in, but there's GFOP at Du Kupiecki reminding me, one of my favourite quips, they tweeted, Saturday is for the boys, but Sunday is for the Moyes. And the game came to life almost immediately, Davo, inside 4 minutes. Was it a goal? Should it have been overruled by VAR? Hot takes only.
I know that the sort of common thread in media is to say that really shouldn't have been a goal. It was a foul on the keeper. But I'm not sure that Ogbonna isn't allowed to put his arms in the air as he's jumping. And if that causes contact with the keeper's arms, who's trying to put his arms in the same space in air and Ogbonna gets his arms there first, I don't know why that would necessarily be disallowed. I mean, yes, you've seen that given as a foul. Yes, you've seen that not given. Alisson certainly looks shaky when the balls come into the box from that kind of a corner. And well done, David Moyes, figuring that out. And I didn't have a problem with it being a goal.
Yeah, 4 minutes in, incredible ball in from Fornals. Ogbonna jumped high, used his arm, you could say, to prevent the goalkeeper from blocking it. It is, by the way, the kind of goal Everton give away on the routine. Alisson was like on the floor like, do you not know who I am? He couldn't believe it wasn't immediately chalked off. Definitely distracted, you could say, by Ogbonna, but also truly weak goalkeeping in that moment. And joy for Moyes. Klopp poo-pooed the goal after the game, but it rattled the back line of Liverpool in a way from which they never truly recovered. And on the stroke of half-time, normal order though, seemed to have been restored. A Trent free kick, such incredible technique, jaw-dropping.
Yeah, that was a fantastic goal. The sort of, you know, passes it to Salah, who stops the ball, changes the sort of angle of attack, and just like hits it in. You know, I was reminded of one of your lines watching this, Rog, that why don't we see more goals scored like that? Because it seems such an obvious way to take a free kick. But he just hits it so sweetly. A perfect combination of pace and curl, Rog.
It's like a balloon of my joy just burst by Trent. What a technical master he is. And it became a robust game. Cresswell could have, should have been sent off for going over the top. Jota, West Ham fans argue, could have got an early bath for a bit of an elbow. Liverpool, though, dominated possession. West Ham trying to snap out on the counter. Remarkable. Got to say this, watching West Ham smother Liverpool, it is hard to overstate how good Liverpool are with the ball. And to watch West Ham do what they did, which is repel them, having just played on Thursday, to keep their focus and their patience. So Moyes, you know, the more pragmatic, the more organised, the more disciplined West Ham became, the more you could feel Liverpool's doubt creep in. You know, the more West Ham wouldn't bend but not break. Klopp said after the game, Liverpool's lack of calibration in this one. And they were a tiny bit sloppy in possession, played into West Ham's hands. He said, we had them where we wanted them at 1-1, but we lost too many balls and allowed them to counter-attack. We lost a bit of patience. And yes, they did, Dave, because West Ham took the lead again on a stunning counter.
Yeah, fantastic counter. And the counter was on for them all day as Liverpool press, you know, Trent Alexander-Arnold pushes up so high and there's space behind him. And you know, look, West Ham, you know, took advantage. And at the end, that sort of like, you know, wonderful moment on the break. You don't see enough one-on-ones with the keeper. And Fornals puts it away with a, you know, Alisson got off hand to it or a bit of his bum to it or some part of his body to it. But it crossed the line.
Yeah, I've got to credit Bowen, English Taylor Twelman looky-likey, off link to Liverpool, who went on a barreling run, dragging three Liverpool defenders with him. Honestly, it was like watching peak Earl Campbell NFL videos. It was remarkable. Liverpool threw on Thiago, who has been as a rescue attempt, a bit like Scatman Carruthers in The Shining. I mean, his inconsistent form at Liverpool is one of the most fascinating under-discussed stories of the past two seasons. West Ham kept coming, and that third goal was a stunning exclamation point.
Yeah, I mean, Jurgen Klopp can complain all he wants about the first goal, but why he then wouldn't adjust, realising that this is a strategy from West Ham, doesn't put defenders on the post, certainly not a defender on the far post, no defenders, you know, goal side of Alisson as he's going for the ball. And Trent is just watching as Kurt Zouma peels around the back and nods it in to do what I've seen him do 100 times for Chelsea. Great goal.
Yeah, he learnt it at Everton. He arrived. I mean, you saw him coming from miles away. You scream at the television. You saw that. It was like a train. He had time to build up so much speed. Head that ball. A beautiful Bowen curling deep to the back of the goal mouth. I think it was an in-swinger. And Alisson again scrambling. Cue bubbles, cue mania, cue noise. It felt like the London Stadium, which has been, let's be honest, largely terrible atmospherically, suddenly felt as close and frenzied as to the old Berlin ground, and it was magic. Magic to win. So I did love this. They asked Moyes after the game, this is classic, how hard must your team train on these brilliant set pieces? And I love this. Moyes just said, no. Essentially, we got big lads who like to get at it. That's his quote. I love that. No, I mean, it's just peak Davy Moyes, Davo, just given the chance to make his job seem like genius. Essentially, the broadcaster was saying, David Moyes, can you big up yourself in this moment of glory? And he's just like, nah, the game's simple. Set pieces. Mikel Antonio on the counter. Defensive organisation. That is Moyes' ball. Three shots on target. Three goals. A parsimonious dream.
Fantastic goal, but it still wasn't over, Rog. You sort of felt like Liverpool could get back into this game, and they did. Divock Origi with an amazing spin in the box.
Yeah, that old bastard. It was an amazing goal. I was like, West Ham, watch him. He will score off any body part. Don't sleep on Divock. And by the way, Moyes' teams, Everton, I mean, inevitably would sit back deeper and deeper and deeper and concede. I've seen that 100 times. When Everton had something to lose, we would lose it. It was a movie so over and over again. And this was a huge test of whether he's learned any lessons at all. And Liverpool did have their chance in injury time. Really well-worked free kick. Mane ghosting in at the back, but heading excruciatingly, actually gloriously. Who am I kidding? Wide. When it was actually harder to head wide than hit the target. And that was at Davo. Is David Moyes beaming at the final whistle one of the truly disturbing but wonderful images of the season so far?
Yeah, it was wonderful. And, you know, very hard to read Jurgen Klopp's face at the end. You know, it was confounding, I think, for the Liverpool manager, what had just happened to him.
His West Ham have beaten Liverpool, Man City, Man United, Tottenham and Leicester this season. If he hadn't already soiled himself in the Manchester United job, we would all be linking him to it right now, as you say. Won 7 of their first 11 games of the season, are ahead of Liverpool now. Incredible season. And again, the joyous scenes, delirium, bubbles, Sweet Caroline, West Ham fans who have had glory baked into their history. So many false dawns, the Dimitri Payet flickering wonder. Just raise my bud to your success. Sustain it, please. Few fan bases deserve it more. But constant glory is grueling and tough. You know, Ogbonna, the news this morning, actually has an ACL injury. He'll be out for a couple of months. News that highlights the challenge of the depth of the squad. Yeah. Winning not exactly something David Moyes has done before. Are they serious title contenders, David?
Yeah, bring in Jesse Lingard on loan again. I don't think they're serious title contenders. But I probably would have said the same thing about Leicester in November of their title winning season. So you never know, but I feel like there are three teams in Man City, Liverpool and Chelsea who are so good, and certainly in the case of City and Chelsea, so deep that they're going to have too much for them by the end of the season. Or one of those three will have too much for them by the end of the season.
You never really know, but you do kind of know. Liverpool, we should button on them. So dominant last month, just reeling off 5-0 after 5-0, suddenly stalling. The first loss of the season there. Remarkable 25-match unbeaten streak over. West Ham leapfrog over them into third place. There is a susceptibility, David, defensively. They are leaking goals at a rate they have not before with Big Virg.
Two of the goals from set pieces. Only one of them from open play. Those set piece goals seem correctable with, you know, a different defensive lineup at corners, because believe me, every other team will start trying to expose Alisson with that.
Yes.
They'll have all watched
yes.
it.
Yes.
They should be able to pick that out. But yeah, it was not only, it wasn't so much Virg, but it was, you know, when you press forward that high with your wing backs, you know, Virg can't be a one man, you know, stopping team at the other end. You know, you've got to occasionally do some defending on the wings, or you create so much space behind you that somebody eventually is going to exploit it.
Not every centre back can do it all. Not every centre back's a Yerry Mina. Yeah, but yeah. You're right, every single Premier League video analyst is now going to pull every single Liverpool corner and watch Alisson's weaknesses, which will be given a fine probing over the course of the rest of the season. He's a fantastic goalkeeper. Yep. But expect every corner from now on to be dropped within a millimetre of his beard region. A giant, suddenly made man-sized Arsenal, surging Arsenal, await after the international break.
Ooh, okay, Chelsea won. Burnley won, a team that always gives us problems, Rog. Chelsea had what looked to be a stranglehold on this game in the first half, really at any point in the game, but could only convert one time. That came in the 33rd minute when Reece James whipped in just a sensational cross for Kai Havertz to cushion home. And they paid for that profligacy in the second half when Burnley did what it says on the tin. Ashley Westwood whipped in a cross and rich man's Andy Carroll, J. Rodriguez, knocked it down for Matty Vidra to poke it past Mendy. That is the first goal that Chelsea have conceded from open play all season. In the end, Chelsea stay top with a 3-point cushion. But Sean Dyche bloodied our nose again at the bridge. Rog, unfortunately for Tommy Tuchs, it was only figuratively.
Yeah, let's talk about that. I mean, this was the Clarets arriving fresh off the first big boy win of the season against league-leading Chelsea, the Chelsea of Ross Barkley. Yes, that same Ross Barkley used to play football.
Yeah, and Ross played quite well.
Yeah, he ran Burnley ragged, and Chelsea shot after shot, 25 of them, chance after chance. Havertz missed a bunch. Cho, Callum Hudson-Odoi should have scored. Nick Pope, credit him, massive when called upon. But until the 33rd minute, that Reece James should have gotten a goal for that assist, Dave. It was so beautiful.
Yeah, it was a beautiful ball, speeding down the right. What a season. You know, the young England right back, he's not even our starting right back, is having a powers down the wing and crosses the ball just perfect, inch perfect for Kai Havertz, who, you know, it would have looked like a bad miss, but it was also a good finish. It's one of those, it's one of those weird ones.
He did try to miss it. I did my best to miss it, he said, but even I couldn't miss. Your cross was that good. But the goal was just the appetizer for the main tasty course. Tuchel, who I think was furious for incorrectly exploding over referee Andre Mariner's refusal to award Chelsea a free kick after a collision between Barkley and Tarkowski.
Yeah, Barkley's leg was so high. It was so high. I don't know what he was so upset about.
So high. Decided to celebrate the goal in Sean Dyche's face? Question, Davo.
Yeah, has he never watched Premier League football?
Is Tuchel suicidal or just audacious?
I think he's that weird German kid who is just like, oh, beat me up, why don't you? It won't matter to our long-term outcomes.
God, there was always one kid in school who'd love to fight and he won a couple but lost loads but kept fighting. He just loved the pain. You think Tuchel's that guy?
I think he is. I think he likes to suffer.
Oh, after the game, a journalist asked Dyche how he experienced this moment, which is up on our Instagram if you've not seen it. A question that included the line, this is from a grown journalist. You're quite a hard man, Sean. I'd be a bit scared in that situation. Yeah, Dyche just said, I didn't see Tuchel. I mean, Davo, if he had seen Tuchel, would he not have snapped Tuchel like a toothpick in a tracksuit?
Yeah, I think he would have. I don't think there's any doubt who's going to come out victorious in that fight.
You looky like a 17th century German romantic poet who's got consumption and dies of a fatal wound caused dueling over some chaste love. I can genuinely imagine this was not reported, but Tuchel was found after the game with an atomic wedgie left hanging by his German undies on a peg in the Chelsea locker room. I can't confirm or deny that. Mm. But Mendy's superhuman, but he's not invincible, is he?
No, there's nothing he could do for this goal. And it was one of those things that when you're in the crowd now, mate, John Johnson was in the crowd. You can just feel it coming the entire time. You know, the crowd were getting restless because they realised that Chelsea weren't putting them away. Suddenly Burnley were getting a bit more time on the ball. They're lumping their big boys upfield. And the goal came and it was just, you know, one of those. It was just out of the Burnley playbook. It was just, as I said in the intro, it was on the Burnley tin.
I was thunderstruck and Vidra popped home. Find Jay Rodriguez flick. I love Jay Rodriguez. And it was a remarkable reward for a performance in which the Clarets, they did credit them, defended like warriors. Though I am sad to report, Sean Dyche did not celebrate in front of Tuchel's face.
Yeah, in front of Tuchel's face would have been with his fists pounding his face, I think.
God, that would have just been amazing. And again, you've read the stat, incredible. First Chelsea goal conceded from open play all season, came in their 11th game. Two penalties and a goal off a corner are the only previous goals they've leaked. And Tuchel, 2-1, dentally challenged Mason Mount. I mean, of course he's dentally challenged. And Pulisic, for his first league action since August. Mm. Welcome back, Christian. Dude feasts on Burnley but couldn't make a dent. Davo, how do you explain this one to yourself? Is it just one of those games? XG, Chelsea 3.06, Burnley 0.65. Was this just a peak Burnleying?
Yes, I think this is what can happen in the Premier League. I think Chelsea played very well, played some good football, getting good work from their bench. They've got a lot of, you know, injuries, a lot of players out. I think this was fine. And certainly with what happened with Liverpool and what happened to Manchester City last week, this was probably a better result than both of those. So it's fine. They're still 3 points ahead. You know, the league title is not going to be decided in early November. And Chelsea, I think, will still feel pretty good about their direction, where they're going. Another team that should feel pretty good about where they're going, Rog, Arsenal. They beat Watford 1-0. They remain the Premier League's hottest team for reals after a sprawling Ben Foster save on a first-half Ober penalty. Mikel Arteta's side found their way through in the 56th minute. Another Emile Smith-Rowe catch and shoot, a facsimile of the goal he scored last week, but from about 15 yards further out. It's his third goal in three league games. After losing their first three, Arsenal have taken 20 of 24 points. They're up to fifth place, just 2 points behind Liverpool.
In front of owner's son, Josh Kroenke, a.k.a. Kendall Roy with a beard, another significant milestone in Arsenal, the search for consistency, which for you is winning one when playing badly. It's hard to believe this is the same team who opened their worst ever start to a top flight season with those three straight defeats against Brentford, Chelsea and Man City when they conceded 9 goals and scored none. This season for Arsenal, hare and the tortoise. Or Mikel Arteta, hair helmet and the tortoise. Not always pretty. Aubameyang trying to single-handedly F it up by missing a penalty saved by YouTuber Ben Foster, then denying Odegaard a goal by tapping it in when he was offside. But good football is built on a great back line, and Ramsdale, the hero last week, did not have a save to make in this one, David.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I don't think Watford are a very good Premier League side.
I think they're bloody good. Watford, you are my daddy, but go on.
But nor are Burnley, and this was a good result. And Arsenal are grinding them out. They're doing what Arsenal haven't been doing in recent years. And I think we should add Arteta to the list of managers with a real tactical plan and the performances he's getting out of players. Emile Smith-Rowe has now earned an England call-up, Rog. You know, this is phenomenal, the way that players are developing under him.
Yeah, I mean, we say this now that he's a manager of a real tactical plan. If he'd had the same results, you know, losing those three in the run-up to the international weekend in which so many managers have been culled, maybe we'd feel differently. He just got his losses in early and has then led to a resurgence. Emile Smith-Rowe, again, the hero. A controversial goal. Watford had put the ball out of play so their player could get medical attention waste time on the clock. And the custom, it is the custom. You do throw it back to the team that put it out, don't you, David?
You do.
Arsenal didn't. 10 seconds later, Emile scored for the third successive game. Ranieri rightly went bonkers. But let's focus on the positive. An England call-up now for Smith-Rowe. And this, a quick, intelligent, bright finish. I just see him this season. You know, last season, he always would look to pass from that position, defer to his elders. This season, he's so much more assertive. He always, always fancies his chances. And that is almost the motif of this young Arsenal side, Davo. They have been empowered to assert themselves.
Yeah, a word I'm trying to use a lot in my tennis game right now, Rog, is intent. And he's a player who plays with glorious intent every single time he has the ball, whether he passes or increasingly what he does is, dribbles and shoots. I love watching him play.
10 games unbeaten in all comps. Fifth, 3 points ahead of United. That after spotting all teams a 9-point head start. So many young prodigies bedding in. Optimism surging ahead of the international break. Real optimism, I hope, rather than Arsenal surging, you know, between hope and despair. As producer Jonah, diehard Arsenal fan, texted me at the final whistle. History tells me not to get too carried away here, but I described the Arsenal good vibes right now as germinating. I'm getting carried away. I'm getting carried away.
Roger, we're going to be back to talk the rest of this weekend's Premier League action, including Everton versus Spurs, after a few words from the GFOPs at BetterHelp.
You know what feels even better than correctly predicting the outcome of a football game? Winning up to 100 times your cash while doing it. Cash in with your soccer knowledge on Prize Picks, America's number one fantasy sports app. Quick withdrawals, easy gameplay, an enormous selection of players and stat types. That's what makes Prize Picks America's number one fantasy sports app. We love easy gameplay here at Men in Blazers. Just love it. Easy gameplay. Prize Picks offers weekly promotions and special offers for the biggest moments of the sports season. Look, for Everton fans, it's not been the easiest campaign, although it hasn't been the worst either. Yet, .. But one way to make those Sean Dyche-induced draws more exciting, Prize Picks. Love smashing more on Jordan Pickford saves, less on Michael Keane passes completed, and much, much less on Beto goal contributions. Oh, it allows me to feel good about feeling bad. Download the app today and use code MIB for a first deposit match up to $100. That's promo code MIB. Prize Picks. Pick more, pick less. It's that easy. It's Rog here to tell you about a product that I simply adore. It's been a long time staple in the Bennett refrigerator, Stoke Cold Brew Coffee. Always bold, always smooth. Yes, that is the very same Stoke as in the mighty Wrexham Fortress, known as the Stoke Kairas or the Stoke Racecourse, Wrexham AFC's home. They support it. They support football, which is just one great reason to love this coffee. It is my go-to enjoy during the football calendar, essentially the opposite of Everton. And you can check out their full lineup of 48 ounce cold brew products, something for everybody, from light to dark roast to seasonal favorites in a refrigerated multi-serve format. I tell you this as someone whose blood type is now officially Stoke Espresso Blend. Have the coffee house experience in the comfort of your own home and do it now. Stoke Cold Brew Coffee, and be sure to follow Wrexham AFC. Big love to all at Stoke. Courage.
Brentford 1, Norwich 2. The Canaries, down the coal mine, long thought dead, show a flicker of life getting their first win of the season. They started the scoring on 6 minutes when a man for whom the rug matches the curtains, we're talking, of course, about his platinum hair and Norwich's yellow jerseys, Matthias Norman, hit home from distance. They doubled the lead in the 29th minute via a pooky penalty. Brentford pulled one back, but the East Anglia side hold on. However, just hours after scoring two goals for the first time in 29 Premier League games and winning, they sack their manager, Daniel Farke.
Yes, we should say quickly before we delve into the Norwich anals, Brentford suddenly leaking goals at one end, blowing chances at the other. The good vibes stalled, being beaten by Norwich. I mean, towel thrown in at Norwich. At home is the reality of reality checks for Thomas Frank, who's got games upcoming against Newcastle, Everton, Leeds and Watford. Should be said, all winnable, but to splutter through them will define whether this season is a joyous act of levitation or a dogged relegation fight with those happy early memories burning off for the mighty bees. But this is about Norwich, Davo. Surprise first win of the season. Both goals, it should be said, courtesy of sloppy defending. Just brief respite for Daniel Farke, who was fired shortly afterwards. We don't do the winning here, son. That's not what we're about. Davo, do Norwich know that they can't do the tank for draft picks thing in the Premier League?
Yeah, clearly not.
I mean, 11 games in, five managers have been squid gamed. The international break really is now just a time for managerial culling. The sporting director of Norwich, Stuart Webber, said, "We feel now is the right time for a change to give ourselves the best opportunity of retaining our Premier League status." And I felt for Farke. You know, Norwich clearly feel they can actually do more to salvage their Premier League status with a change, but it is hard to describe just how iconic he was on the good days at Carrow Road. Daniel Farke, of that beloved Blur-inspired Fark Life chant, "All those Germans, so many Germans." I actually remember I went to film in Norwich, Davey. And I met the owners of a sushi joint, very tasty sushi joint. Hello to everyone at Shiki in Norwich. And the owners, Shun and Maiko, had a baby, Kiriku, right before the Canaries were promoted last time, not this one. And they wanted to show their love of the team. So they had baby Kiriku and they middle named this beautiful baby who I met in film with. They named him Fark Life. Great sushi. Great baby, great times, great memories. Next manager in, Davo. You know who's emerged as the favourite at Norwich City?
Yeah, Frank Lampard.
Yes.
Frank Life.
I do wonder if they're going to have to change the baby's name. Davo, Kiriku, Frank Lampard has a nice ring to it.
Yeah, amazing. You know, shocking decision coming after the win. But, you know, in some ways, they'd obviously made the decision before that game that the team were heading in the wrong direction, a direction that they've seen them head in before, straight back down after coming up. And, you know, I wish only good things for that city and that charming team.
I'm just loving talking about managers being fired. What's the next game we're going to talk about, Davey?
Yeah, Southampton 1, Aston Villa 0. And you know, you can't kill Ralph Hampton that easily. We're alluding to Dean Smith, who was fired after Villa suffered their fifth straight loss. This one, courtesy of an Adam Armstrong third-minute South Coast Hulk smash. Back-to-back wins for Southampton into the blissful obscurity of mid-table. Villa, though, are just 2 points clear of the relegation zone, and they are listing, Roger.
Fifth straight defeat, the worst run of Dean Smith's career. Villa better, especially in the second half, but not, as it turned out, good enough. Southampton fans sang for the final quarter of the game. Oh, petty delight. They sang, "Are you watching Danny Ings?" An ode to former talisman Ings, who left the Saints, saying, "I'd like the challenge of moving to a huge club." Villa, a team who are 4 points below Southampton, 2 points off the relegation zone. A reminder, football's unpredictable, and that football fans are like elephants who never forget. Sunday morning, Villa CEO Christian Purslow, who had talked about this club, who bought Buendia, Leon Bailey and Danny Ings with the Grealish money, about how they would now challenge for Europe. And he said, "We've just not seen the continuous improvement in results, performances and league position we were looking for. So they're making the change." Davo, five Premier League managers have now been sacked this season, 11 games in, one more than the whole of the last campaign. What do you make of it all?
It's all about money, Rog. The cost of relegation is just too high for these teams, and it's just terrifying. And these, to some extent, are panic related. I mean, look, I think Dean Smith is the situation I understand least. Of course, we're not there at the club seeing what's going on. We're not hearing all the, you know, what is happening. And it's a little odd the way that all those assistants have departed from Dean over the last couple of years. And ultimately, you know, you look at the way that the frat house was playing football up until this season, and you feel that he did a very, very good job there. And, you know, despite being saved by VAR that one Premier League season when they conceded that goal that should have been given that crossed the line, and VAR, I think it was occlusion was the word.
Yep, against poor Sheffield United.
Yeah, that saved them. But I think he's done a very good job since then. So I'm surprised, and yet that's the nature of football these days.
I'm actually not sure this one was all Dean Smith's fault. You know, beyond the new signings, this is a thin squad. Injuries have exposed its lack of depth. And I was really touched by the accolades that Dean Smith received from the Villa faithful as he departed. He will be remembered in the pantheon of classic Villa managers, your Ron Atkinsons, your John Gregorys. Every Villa fan I know wishes he'd been given more time. But as you say, the modern Premier League doesn't offer that luxury in a way it once did. The mere threat of relegation demands instant change of horse and rider. And Dean Smith, I can attest, is a lovely, lovely bloke. Villa through and through. He talked with joy about watching his dad, who was a steward at Villa Park as a kid. And we'll see who they get in now, because to be honest, this club seemed more like an Eddie Howe kind of club than where he's ended up, which we'll talk about in a minute. But Stevie Gerrard, heavily linked, Dave Out and John Terry, also in the conversation.
He'll have to get off Twitter if he wants to be if he wants to be considered.
Given a choice between getting off Twitter and Instagram and becoming a manager, it's a tough call, but I'm going to stay on social media.
Okay, Rog, from two managerial obituaries to a birth announcement of sorts. Brighton 1, Newcastle 1, new manager Eddie Howe watched on from the Amex stands as his future Toon fought back to earn a point at Brighton. The Seagulls took the lead via a first-half Leandro Trossard penalty, but a swivelling 66th-minute Isaac Hayden half-volley levelled the score. Newcastle still in 19th and now ahead of Norwich on only goal difference.
A forgettable game defined by the lols of Lewis Dunk having to go in goal late on after a Robert Sanchez late tactical foul saw the keeper get red. Dunk joined the likes of Harry Kane, Kyle Walker, Phil Jaggs as the comedy outfielder donning the gloves. But it all happened so late, he didn't even have to make a save. Newcastle continue to look for their first win of the Piffcastle era. They remain the only Premier League side without victory. Each of the last four Premier League teams to endure a similar start have gone on to be relegated. And you did have new manager Eddie Howe watching the game. He was appointed yesterday officially. I like him very much. He talks about himself as a learner who likes to lead a learning organisation, which made sense to me at Bournemouth. But there's few clubs that less fit that bill than the two. Do you see him, Davo, being the man who can change, well, everything?
Yeah, well, I mean, he could be the sixth manager fired this season if he doesn't turn it around quickly, because I doubt there's going to be a huge amount of patience up there for a project of sorts. You know, they must be paying him well to do the job is all I can say, because I don't know who would want that gig right now.
Eddie Howe, I can say he is about as 180 degree away from Unai Emery strategically, who is the other manager in the conversation, but a decent bloke, a lovely bloke, hired to me, as much as I can see, for the brand of being a decent bloke. You know, he's like a puppy. Oh, look, how bad can we be? We have Eddie Howe, but this squad needs so much help. He's not really a relegation fireman. He's got 9 more games till the transfer window opens. One note that is fascinating, he moved to Burnley while at Bournemouth very briefly, but he hated it because his family did not like leaving the south. And Newcastle, I mean, how far north is Newcastle, David?
It's north of Scotland. I mean, it's so far up there.
It's north of the wall, Game of Thrones hands. It's Craster's Keep, essentially. It's going to be fascinating to see if it works. One note of positivity for Newcastle fans. The board are reported to be attempting to bring in former Chelsea backroom genius Michael Emanalo as their director of football, which, if true, would that not be like suddenly turn operations from botched job to ruthless organisation, David?
Yeah, I mean, that's a promising move.
I mean, that's like the difference between my life and my wife's container store fueled life. It is night and day. That would be incredible.
Palace 2, Wolves 0. Patrick Vieira's Palace starting to take flight, Rog, getting their second win on the bounce here after a scoreless first half. Wilf drew first blood in the 61st minute with a rare Vard on goal after he'd originally been ruled offside. Conor Gallagher made it 2-0 with his fourth goal of the season, and Palace stay unbeaten in 6. They're up to 10th in the table.
Palace's one season only love affair with Conor Gallagher, never leave us, Conor, becomes deeper and deeper. The 21-year-old Chelsea loanee just charged relentlessly around that field alongside grizzled vet James McArthur, Scrappy Doo and Scooby. If Scooby was a practitioner of street fighting and the dark arts, it's been one of the joys of the season watching that human being. It's been a joy of the season watching Palace. Yeah. There you go. Under Patrick Vieira, all those new players, all that young talent, we wrote him off, but to mould it so quickly and confidently, it's so bloody impressive.
Yeah, and I think, look, one of the reasons that a lot of these other managers are being offed is because of how well Palace are doing, because I think at the beginning of the season a lot of people felt that Palace were, you know, in danger of certainly being in a bit of a relegation fight, and the fact that they've done so well, I think a lot of other owners are looking at their dugouts and thinking, why aren't we doing that well?
God, watching Palace, that Palace faithful, they just deserve their joy. Watching their team go toe-to-toe in a tough 11-game opening stretch and lose only to Chelsea and Liverpool, it's really an achievement of true wonder.
Leeds 1, Leicester 1. One of the league's most avant-garde, tactically astute, enigmatic Premier League managers against Marcelo Bielsa. Rafinha gave the home side the lead with a 26th-minute free kick from way out wide, but just seconds later, from the ensuing kickoff, Leicester thump one long downfield. Harvey Barnes collects it, cuts inside, pins one into the top corner to level the score. I did it! After a leggy start to the campaign, Leeds are unbeaten in 3 and move 3 points clear of the relegation zone.
Brodgeball, what a stunner. I mean, Harvey Barnes, God, just Yuri Tielemans, that ball. But nice to see Leeds. Beautiful to see the Leeds of last season back in this one, propelled by midfielder Adam Forshaw, who's been out with a series of brutal injuries that have kept him on the injury list since 2019. He just relished the opportunity to come back, control the game, and have Leeds play like they do, like an NFL defence that blitz every down. But without Patrick Bamford, they missed chance after chance until Rafinha drilled his 5th of the season. Dude, one of the best strikers on a non-Champions League team, which is a bit ominous ahead of January's transfer window. Brodge cannot summon any defensive solidity for the Foxes. That's a big difference this season. 10th straight game without a clean sheet. Brodge Ball out, as we've discussed, thanks to Harvey Barnes. Absolutely fantastic. And then Leicester worked out to keep Leeds at arm's length for the end. And we're actually unlucky to have a late Lookman goal notched off by a marginal VAR. The Brodge promised Leicester, Dave, will be, quote, a different animal after the break with the return of James Justin and Wesley Fofana from injury. And the question is, Dave, what kind of animal do you think Brodge sees himself as?
That's a great question.
It is a great. I've given this one a tiny bit of thought. When Brodge looks in the mirror, what do you think? What do he sees?
He's lovable, so he's a dog.
Yeah.
But he's also fierce like a Tyrannosaurus Rex.
Yep.
He's fast like a gazelle.
Yep. And ruthless. He's a leader of ruthlessness.
Yes.
Like a what's an alpha thing? Is it a wildebeest? No,
I don't know.
What is
and
it?
And then something unexpected like a cod. It's like, what? Yes, I'm a cod.
They're very faithful lovers.
Roger is an animal of his own making. I mean, I'm not even sure he's Homo sapien. I mean, he's something like a Ligerod.
Yeah,
a Ligerod Rex. Well.
You've got to throw a doodle in there. Brodge doodle. I'm a Brodge doodle.
I'm a woozle and a heffalump.
I think Brodge sees himself as a brown Antechinus, which is a rodent which has its sole purpose seems to be to have as much sex as possible.
Oh.
It can have sex for 14 hours at a time over and over again. And that is how
that
sees himself.
That's exhausting.
In reality, Brodge is probably a giraffe who I Googled to find out has the worst sex possible. It generally lasts approximately 1 second and takes place after the male uses his head to whack a female in the side, which prompts her to pee. He then tastes the aforementioned pee to see whether she's ovulating, and if she is, Brodge the giraffe proceeds to awkwardly follow around, attempting to mount her from behind while she tries to walk away from him. I mean, tell me that's not Pete Brodge.
Oh, the animal kingdom. It's brutal.
By the way, sorry, children listening, about that, about all that stuff. You're all shouting at your pod radios, silly Rog. Brodge doesn't see himself as an animal. Brodge sees animals and asks what type of Brodge they are.
You just ruined giraffes for everyone.
God, can you imagine just tasting pee? Should we do it?
No, let's not. Come on, Rog, no more delaying. Everton 0, Tottenham 0. The Sadnap Derby sees Antonio Conte get a point in his first league game in charge as Spurs manager. And your Everton... Well, they stop the bleeding.
Correct.
As they pick up their first point in four games. You hear that, Rog? It's the sound of a transcontinental head pat.
Battle of the Baiters. Everton in free fall after three losses, facing Tottenham of Antonio Conte, that serial winner who joined a serial non-winner, should we say. Something has to give there, Dave, as we will discuss. But Spurs clearly think that top four is open with United floundering, hence Conte's arrival. And I was very afraid going into this of the new manager bounce. On the other hand, I had watched the Europa Conference League game against Vitesse and witnessed the chaos. I think you call him Italian Joe Namath, don't you?
Yeah, he looks a lot like Joe Namath.
Yeah, I mean, that to me is better than my take that he looks like the three surviving Rolling Stones if you smash their faces together into one human. He'd had just one training session, to be fair to him, with his new skittish three at the back. It was all hard to watch. Everton had found Fabian Delph in a closet somewhere and let him loose. I think it took me 90 seconds to shout, "What are you doing?" at the television when watching Everton. Thank God Tottenham also playing in a puddle of their own confidence. And both teams just frantic, desperate, do-man football. I'd say both teams played as if their lives depended on it. And you know Antonio Conte, probably for Spurs players,
yeah,
their life
true.
Probably did, right?
Yeah, and Fabian Delph, meanwhile, was Everton's best player, which is amazing to see him come back. Who would have predicted this game to finish 0-0? I certainly wouldn't. And it wasn't a great game of football, Rog. I somehow made it through it.
It ended 0-0 because, Everton missed Dominic Calvert-Lewin so badly as a hard-running finisher. And you watch Premier League teams, good Premier League teams play, and it's a game of partnerships in attack, pass and move. And you watch Everton, and it's just well-intentioned individual players charging forward in a desperate kind of frenzy. Tottenham.
Did you just call Richarlison a well-intentioned individual player?
Oh, God love Rich. Richie should have had a penalty, in fairness, right at the end. Don't knock Richie. Tottenham, also so bloody monodimensional, no creator to play a killer ball. So a vaguely interested, I'd say vaguely interested Harry Kane drops back, but then has no one to pass to. He's a bit like watching a quarterback trying to throw a bomb to himself. And their one great chance, Reguilon blasted over. I think Lo Celso spanked the post late. But Dave, fixing Harry Kane will be step number one for Conte. Whatever it is physically or mentally that's going on with him, how do you understand that?
Oh, my God. I just can't. I mean, it's so difficult because we've written off Harry Kane so many times before, but only sort of for a month at a time. And now this is, we're well into November now and we've not seen him return. I mean, I'm sure Conte is going to apply the instruments of torture, or at least show him the instruments to get him back into it. He doesn't look completely fit. I think a few sessions at the Antonio Conte boot camp may help him a little bit. But now he's off on international duty. They definitely need Kane and Sonny, who looked like a shadow of himself in this game, to really come back, because that's the only way that they even stand a chance of sniffing the top four.
What was it like watching a man you've respected at Chelsea, Antonio Conte, in this new relationship?
It's not difficult. I mean, I love Antonio Conte. I loved him as Chelsea manager. I was very sorry to see him go, but I do respect him a lot. I think he's superb. And, you know, look, you and I, we've discussed a lot before. We both have a soft spot for Tottenham. And I'd like to see him succeed with these players, many of whom I respect also. It's interesting, you know, he's all fire and, you know, arm flapping on the sidelines, and he's going to need to see more of that energy returned by his side. There was still precious little energy shown by Tottenham in this game. You know, it's definitely an uptick from what we saw against Man United last week, but it wasn't like, you didn't watch them like, you know, sweating through their shirts, you know, in this performance.
Yeah, I mean, they did. I mean, every other team, every big six team would have got that penalty that was VAR'd off late. They really would today. In a way, they dodged a bullet. But I think poor Antonio will have gotten a real sense of just how massive a project this season at Spurs is going to be. This team who have failed to have a shot on target in their last 227 minutes, incredible, of Premier League football. The Spurs of Kane and Son, that's truly, I mean, it's remarkable. But Conte and his two-a-days and his three-a-day training sessions, as you say, is going to go medieval on this squad. At CurlyMD tweeted us, there's a good chance Conte loses his second set of hair with us. And I want to thank so many GFOPs, especially Ron Hogan, who is one of many to translate Dave Laz's new Spurs motto, excited to be disappointed again, into Latin. Wait for it, Davo. It's parare, excitare, dolore. And also, I want a God big, and you know who you are, a handful of you both translated it into Latin and then found the Spurs jersey motto and wrote that out in Spurs motto font. Parare, excitare, dolore, chef's kiss. We should put that on a mug.
Yeah, may need a few Spurs GFOPs to get it tatted on their inner thighs, Rog. Okay, Rog, can we get one final toast with that exclamation point in a bottle, Jägermeister, to bring us home?
Mate, I need this morning. I need to raise this shot of Jägermeister, this bolt of human emotion in a shot glass, to the US men's national team squad, who are uniting from all points as we speak. Avengers assemble. They're going to gird their loins, prepare to do battle against Mexico and then Jamaica. There will be no Serginho Dest out with injury. Joe Skelly incoming. A couple of eyebrow raisers. You got an Areola, but no Conrad. Not sure what he has to do to prove himself. John Brooks left off due to a slumping club form that doesn't seem to apply to other players in the squad. And I'll say this, when I think of him in a veteran-free squad or a veteran-scarce squad, John Brooks' experience, even if he doesn't play is going to be so bloody hard to replace on this children's crusade. The good news, of course, Christian Pulisic is back. And this Mexico game is going to be the real test. Different to the matches in the Gold Cup, which was our B team, and the other new CONCACAF trophy we just invented over the summer. This one means everything. It will be the true barometer for progress. We wish our gents strength, confidence, belief, and Godspeed. Roll on Friday night. Oh, and Godspeed, Greg Berhalter. 3 G's for good game, Greg. 3 G's. 4 G's. That's 5 G's.
Yeah. And also, just as a Chelsea fan, I hope CP has little awareness of anything over this break.
Other than banging goals.
Okay, you can follow us on Twitter at Men in Blazers, at Embassy Davies, at Roger Bennett on Instagram. We are at Men in Blazers or at Embassy Davies on Facebook. We are the Men in Blazers. You can always send your ravens to the crap part of Soho. You can always email us at meninblazers@gmail.com. Vendor.Rog.
War pig!
Was that a Rabona?
I like snacks.
Balds win, balds win.
Take that, Gloria.
Balds lose.
To Tweed.
Abracada, rock on, mate.
Kung Fu Fight in America. Love you, Davo.
Love you, Rog.
Now, erase the mental vision of Brodge the giraffe from your brain. Go on, go about your day. Hey, Prime members. You can listen to Men in Blazers ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
If you travel for work, you know to pack 2 suits, business and swim. You know with your Delta SkyMiles Business Amex card, buying that plane ticket for a business trip can get you closer to medallion status. You know that a meeting in Montana means visiting almost every national park.
Yellowstone? Check.
Because you're the chief excursion officer. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum Business American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Terms apply. Visit go.amex/you know business.